The House will come to order. The flag salute will be led by Representative Buckley.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Our opening ceremonies will be led by Representative Carolyn Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm asking that you stand because I know when you sit down, you're going to start to work, and I want you to listen to me. Colleagues, this morning was the breakfast for the Women's Health and Wellness Alliance. Thanks to you who came to that breakfast. For those of you who didn't, packets will be delivered to your offices to let you know what the issues we'll be working on. To celebrate that, we had asked wonderful Senator Margaret Carter to come and sing to us this morning. She has laryngitis, so she couldn't do that. So nobody asked me to sing, thank goodness. But it was suggested that I read what it was she was going to sing, and it's called I Am Woman. As I read this through last night, thinking about reading this, I had a lot of misgivings. It seemed dated. It made me anxious because I remembered what that was like. And for some of you newbies, you very young people, and you young people up there, you won't know what this was like. This was at a time when we could not pass the Equal Rights Amendment for women. Isn't that breathtaking? This was at a time when women made for the same work 57 cents. And one of the reasons the ERA didn't pass was it was said, well, we would have unisex bathrooms. I have unisex bathrooms in my house. It doesn't seem to be a problem. I don't know if it is in yours. And if you don't understand this era, what I suggest is that you watch Mad Men. It is just, it is an excellent, excellent TV show, and you can get it on DVDs and where you rent DVDs. It's excellent, but it is startling how women were treated and seen at that time. So I want you to think, when I read the words to the song, I want you to think what that time was like. I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore. And I know too much to go back and pretend, because I've heard it all before. And I've been down there on the floor. No one's ever going to keep me down again. Oh, I am wise. But it's wisdom born of pain. Yes, I've paid the price. But look how much I've gained. If I have to, I can do anything. I am strong. I am invincible. I am woman. You can bend me, but you can never break me, because it only serves to make me more determined to achieve my final goal. And I'll come back even stronger, not a novice any longer, because you've deepened the conviction in my soul. I am woman, watch me grow, see me standing toe-to-toe as I spread my loving arms across the land. But I'm still an embryo with a long, long way to go until I make my brother understand. Oh, yes, I am woman. Hear me roar in numbers too big to ignore. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Tomei. Courtesies. For our moment in Oregon's history, Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise this morning for today's sesquicentennial history minute, today involving Oregon's early voting rules. During the summer of 1843, Willamette Valley settlers organized a provisional government using the one law book they had on hand, Organic Laws of the State of Iowa. At the time, taxation was voluntary, and the executive branch of the government was comprised of but one committee. By the summer of 1844, Many new settlers had arrived in the territory, and they made their own alterations to the system. They reduced the executive branch to one person, made taxation compulsory, outlawed alcohol, and banned African Americans from settling in the state. By May of 1845, the provisional government was still referring to the Iowa law book, but it also created Oregon statutes. A vote was taken on whether Oregonians would convene a constitutional convention, the first step on the path towards statehood. The vote failed, however, and citizens, fearful of higher taxes, voted against a convention in the years 1854, 1855, and 1856. These elections were taken seriously. Detailed instructions were spelled out for voting, how to choose officials, when to open and close polls, and who was allowed to cast a ballot. Quote, any male descendant of a white man, end quote, could vote, a provision that gave the vote to children of white fathers and non-white, usually Indian mothers. In 1857, the call for a constitutional convention finally received overwhelming support, and delegates from across the territory headed to Salem to draft the Oregon Constitution. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further courtesies, Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Former state representative from 2002, Ralph Brown currently serves as a chairperson of the Forest Grove School Board and is a board member for Washington County Community Action Organization. He's here today for Head Start Day at the legislature. Washington County has 47 Head Start classrooms serving 809 preschoolers. So, Mr. Speaker, I request unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and former Representative Ralph Brown be granted the privilege of the House and floor.
Representative Riley requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and former Representative Ralph Brown be granted the privileges of the House and floor. Is there objection? So ordered. Welcome, Representative Brown. Further courtesies, Representative Call.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, please extend courtesies to members of student government and board members from Mount Hood Community College here today to witness our historic vote. Janine Johnston, President, Andrew Fries, Vice President, Sam Pagano, Director of Finance, Daniel Pannell, Director of State and Federal Affairs, Steve Perry, Director of Student Organizations, Molly Holt, Senator of Community Outreach, and Dave Shields and Beverly Russell, Mount Hood Community College School Board members.
Welcome to your Oregon House. Further courtesies, Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It is my privilege today to introduce members of the Head Start community who are in town today for the meeting, their annual meeting here in Salem. So would my friends from Head Start please stand up? I have some over here in the back, on the side aisles, and on. So thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I want to recognize that these are people who are committed and do hard work for little pay.
Welcome to the House. Further courtesies, Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to introduce, up in the gallery here, there's a group, and I don't even know how many are actually here. There's a fair amount of them. From the Lebanon area, it's the Cascade Gateway Leadership Group, and I recognize my son's principal, and I recognize the executive director of the chamber, and another couple of our principals there. So please, colleagues, welcome them to the House.
Welcome. Further courtesies, Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I, too, would like to recognize the visiting parents from Lincoln County Head Start. I think there's a couple of them left to represent them. The rest of the group has gone on to a meeting on the Senate side. They were joined by Dean Stephen Kaufman, and I enjoyed visiting with them. I also would like to please make them welcome. I would also like to mention that the Mount Hood Community College group that's here, the student body vice president, Andrew Fries, is a 2006 graduate of Taft High School in Lincoln County.
Welcome. Further courtesies, The clerk will open the voting system to verify a quorum. Representative Harker, are you in the queue on purpose? No. Representative Jensen, are you in the chamber? Representative Jensen is here. All members are present. Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform the Senate to pass Senate Bill 14, 268, 270, 271, 54, 97, 235, and 237.
First reading, memorials and resolutions.
HGR 12, encourage public to take measures to decrease incidence of skin cancer.
Measure read for the first time is passed at the Speaker's desk for referral. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Propositions and motions. First reading of House bills.
House Bill 2572 related to elections, petitions, and declaring emergency. House Bill 2573 related to state lands. House Bill 2574 related to veterinary loan repayment program, appropriate money, declaring emergency. House Bill 2575 related to education scholarships. House Bill 2576 related to documents issued by the Department of Transportation. House Bill 2577 related to workers' compensation claims for blood-borne diseases by public safety officers. House Bill 2578 relating to towers. House Bill 2579 relating to fishing. House Bill 2580 relating to ballots. House Bill 2581 related to rural health. Appropriating money. House Bill 2582 relating to Oregon Center for Business Economic Education, appropriating money, declaring an emergency. House Bill 2583 relating to boats. House Bill 2584 relating to antitrust regulation. House Bill 2585 relating to class actions and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2586 relating to school libraries. House Bill 2587 relating to surgical technologies and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2588 relating to agreement among the states to elect the president by national popular vote. House Bill 2589 relating to health benefit plan coverage of hearing aids. House Bill 2590 relating to auditing of tax expenditures. House Bill 2591 relating to trafficking in illegal aliens and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2592 relating to attorney general. House Bill 2593 related to public employee retirement. House Bill 2594 relating to high school graduation requirements and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2600 relating to transient lodging for persons with disabilities.
Bills read for the first time or passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 2305 relating to shareholder voting. House Bill 2420 relating to workers' compensation claims for cancer by firefighters.
Bills read for the second time or passed to the third reading. Consent calendar. The clerk will read the bill. And a short summary.
House Bill 2357 relating to disclaimers. Modifies Uniform Disclaimer of Property Interest Act, specifies distribution of property to be made after disclaimer of right to inherit property by interstate succession.
Colleagues, it may be worth noting this is our first bill, I believe, this session on the consent calendar. These are put on the consent calendar by committees intentionally because they are non-controversial. So there's not an opportunity for debate on these. You should know in the future that if you see items coming on the consent calendar that you have concerns about, that you should flag those. And you should flag those and notify the clerk. Any four members of the House, whether you're on that committee or not, may just by request to the clerk, move a bill off the consent calendar onto the regular third reading list where it has a full opportunity for debate. And you only have 2 days to do that, so you'll want to watch bills as they come out of committee and committees put them on the consent calendar. So the question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2357. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Springer, how do you vote? Springer votes aye. House Bill 2357, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 14 related to Oregon Patient Safety Commission. Senate Bill 54 related to certified statements of payroll records for public works. Senate Bill 97 related to loan cancellation life insurance. Senate Bill 235 related to small estates. Senate Bill 237 related to powers of attorney. Senate Bill 268 related to rules of the Chief Justice concerning data that state courts may collect. Senate Bill 270 related to courts and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 271 related to fees of the Oregon Tax Court.
Bills read for the first time or passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills. Third reading of Senate bills. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 5562 related to state financial administration and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 5562A. Representative Galizio.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Senate Bill 5562 provides the bonding authority needed for the economic stimulus projects contained in Senate Bill 338. The bill provides $1.9 million in Article 11G bonds, $12 million in Article 11F bonds, $16 million in state energy loan bonds, and $56.3 million in certificates of participation for the Department of Higher Education's projects. The bill authorizes $9.7 million in the Article G and $49.1 million in lottery bonds for community colleges. Certificates of participation in the amount of $35.2 million fund the balance of the projects in the rest of the agencies. Some of the amounts authorized by Senate Bill 5562 vary slightly from the amounts in the Senate Bill 338, as they contain the amount needed for the projects plus any issuance costs. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of Senate Bill 5562.
Further discussion? Representative Richardson.
Mr. Speaker, colleagues.
To the bill?
To the bill.
To the bill.
Ladies and gentlemen, every session there are a few bills that have maximum importance, even historic importance. The bill that we face now and the one that follows is just one such program or package. These are referred to as defining moments in the legislative session. We are in one such defining moment. If we look up, we see the names of those who founded the state of Oregon, who gave us, who bequeathed to us this great state. We see such individuals as David P. Thompson or Marcus Whitman or Ross Cox. And they look down on us at such defining moments and ask, what are you doing with the gift that we have given you with our blood, our sweat, our tears, our very lives in some cases? What would they think if they knew that as a state we have incurred $9.7 billion of long-term debt, which we're seeking to add today? What would they think about the fact that in the next 2 years we will be spending more than $1.1 billion of debt service on that nearly $10 billion of debt? What would they say if they knew that in the next 2 years out of the general fund we will be spending more than $535 million of the taxpayers' money just to service the debt that we're already in before we even face the package that is before us today? $535 million of fungible money, money that could have been spent to help the poor and the needy, to help avoid cutting days
of education from our school districts. I got a call last night. Medford School District faces 18 days to be cut off because of the shortfall in funds that they face in the current biennium. 535 million dollars that'll be paid for debts. That's money that could have been used for public safety, as well as education, as well as for the poor, the needy, those that depend on Oregon services. And yet, here we are today to discuss increasing that debt by approximately $177 million. We are here at a time when we are also facing the largest shortfall in the history of our state. We're considering this additional debt at a time when recently Oregon's economist came forward and called a special meeting in between forecasts to say, you know how in December we gave a forecast that said that the general fund would be short $142 million just to end this current biennium? So we're talking about money that's shortfall to pay the bills between now and the end of this June. And he said, that number looks like it may have been a little bit low. The real number needs to be increased by another $600 million or maybe more. So we have the state economist coming forward and saying that the hole that we face in the next 4.5 months is somewhere around $742 million. That's $750 million. Then the legislative revenue officer that we rely on so much did some calculations. He went back into history and said, where were we in 01 and 02, which led into the five special sessions that this legislature had to endure during the last major recession that we had. He did the calculations and he said, looking at the same factors that existed then and plugging in the numbers that we have now, the figure of the shortfall is more like $800 million. And so you take $142 million shortfall in the December forecast and you add $800 million to it, that puts us at $942 million short.
Representative Gilman yields.
A shortfall of nearly $1 billion that has to be made up in the next 4.5 months. It's like saying the Capitol is on fire. But let's talk about borrowing $177 million in short-term jobs that will incur long-term debt. And what's the justification? Well, we need to assure that there's jobs for Oregonians. My counties are over 10% unemployment. We understand unemployment. But does it make sense at such a time of crisis for this state for us to be saying, let's borrow $177 million when we're already in this hole? We're digging a hole with a shovel called debt. And it makes no sense when we're so far into debt to go deeper into debt at a time when we may need that borrowing resource to merely get through the current biennium. We have a crisis that we are facing. And yet, we're debating a bill that has been described as a benefit for state buildings all across Oregon, where we can take moss off of roofs. We can put gutters on roofs. We can lay carpeting. We can put on new roofs. And certainly, there can be discussions about, well, maybe we didn't really mean the moss removal after all. But that's what's been stated. That's what's included in the list that we've been given. And so no dancing around can take away the reality that we have been given $177 million to vote on today so that we can do short-term jobs in a time of economic crisis. It's unwise. It's ill-advised. It makes no sense for us to take away from Oregon the opportunity to utilize that credit possibly just to get through the shortfall that we face presently. And so we must face a decision today. Do we merely go along like sheep with a bill that's been sent to us by the Senate, a bill that did not get consideration in any committee in the Senate. It didn't get public testimony. The list wasn't given to us or to the senators to review. It wasn't a bipartisan bill because neither party had a chance to look at the list. But it's been sent to us for our vote today. And there's 60 of us, and we represent the citizens of the state of Oregon, and we need to say, if the citizens of the state of Oregon, if they were here, if thousands of people were from each of our districts sitting here filling this room today, what would they have us do? Go further into debt to do a short-term set of jobs when we have a billion-dollar deficit that we're facing in the next 5 months? I would say they would unanimously say, no, certainly we could use the jobs. But these jobs are to solve, it's essentially a bridge. What is the purpose of this bill? It's a bridge. And when do you use job bridges? When you have a V kind of recession. In other words, you know, you got a sharp reduction, things are going down. So I put forth the jobs bill, and then it will bridge over the time until the recovery of the economy. So it's like a V, very short term at the bottom. That's what this bill is about. It's a bridge bill. And yet, just a few weeks ago, this was described as maybe a U kind of recession. In other words, it goes down, but it stays down for a while. Well, now we're being told, no, this may be an L recession, a recession that could go on for not weeks and not months, but possibly even years. Yesterday, the Prime Minister for Britain used the D word for the first time from a national leader. And he said, at a time of depression, there must be corrective actions taken. We have more than just a V recession that must be bridged. We have a systemic problem, and we cannot resolve it with a cyclical resolution as is put forth in this bill. Join me in representing the people of the state of Oregon in saying no new debt at this time. Let us first solve the crisis in which we find ourselves before we talk about a short-term jobs bill with long-term debt. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Stigler.
Mr. Speaker, to the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. Colleagues, I have a deeper voice today than I usually do, but other than that, the economic trends continue to show that we face many challenges as a state. Oregon's unemployment rate is now 9%, and one-third of the job losses are in manufacturing and construction. The latter is particularly pertinent to my neck of the woods in Deschutes County, where the unemployment rate is even higher at 11.3%. Behind each statistic is a neighbor, a friend, a family. More than one out of 10 members of our community who are looking for a job can't find one. The state legislature's first obligation must be to lead Oregon through the most difficult economic climate we have faced in over 75 years, when private industry alone cannot stimulate the economy or create jobs for struggling families. Government often can step in and provide a jump start. The legislature has tools at our disposal that can help, one of which is funding infrastructure projects through bonding. Today, we vote on a stimulus package that will accelerate work on capital construction and deferred maintenance projects, creating thousands of good family wage jobs right away. The result of putting people to work now will have an immediate ripple effect throughout the economy. The jobs we create will be performed in Oregon and filled by Oregonians. We are targeting the hardest hit workers who were the first to lose their jobs, and we are putting people back to work in every corner of this state. The projects are located in all 36 counties, at all 7 state universities, and all 17 community colleges, and that's vitally important. Projects included in this plan have been selected to meet certain criteria. They must be ready to begin now, increase energy efficiency, benefit the public, and contain responsible contractor provisions, putting our community to work now. I want to emphasize that we have put as much effort into accountability measures in this package as the projects themselves. The state agencies that contract out for the work on these projects will have to report back to the legislature. They will have to sit in front of the Ways and Means Committee and account for every penny spent. They must show that the projects began and ended on time. Agencies will tell us how many jobs were created and how many were saved. After years of neglect, these are worthwhile projects that save us money in expensive repairs down the road while getting people back to work right away in our hardest hit sector. We must take bold and sometimes difficult steps to help our families, our neighbors, and our communities. The crisis was not of our making, but it falls on us to make the decisions to put Oregon back to work. I urge your support of this measure.
Further discussion, Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move Senate Bill 5562 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Hanna moves that Senate Bill 5562 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. To your motion.
Thank you to the motion. Colleagues, we're going to hear a lot of debate today on a package and its merits and whether or not it helps Oregon. No doubt this package is well-intended. No doubt every member of this room hopes to improve on the economic situation in Oregon. But because as legislators, as members of the Ways and Means Committee, none of us were included in this decision-making process, this bonding package simply was not fully vetted, but instead was hastily and sloppily crafted and driven down at us. We were not made a part of it. This has been pointed out, and trust me, I didn't really anticipate I'd be quoting President Obama as much as I have. But I want you to hear what he said just last month, and I quote, "Instead of politicians doling out money behind a veil of secrecy, decisions about where we invest will be made transparently and informed by independent experts wherever possible." Colleagues, I'd challenge you to say that we are elected to be part of that expert panel, and we were left out of this process. We can go to work and bring some thoughtful debate, and we can bring transparency to this process. As you have heard, and as your leadership is aware, our caucus put forth a list of reasonable, and I would say very, very reasonable package, vetted through criteria that made sense for capital improvement bonding. We tried to talk about this and negotiate that and bring forth a package that potentially we'd all have an opportunity to weigh in on and vet through, but we got nowhere with that. And yet today we've heard that many of the arguments we made about why many of the items in here weren't included should not be included. That discussion's been validated. Just because the train's left the station, just because we're here talking about this today, doesn't mean we can't change the outcome. We still have that opportunity. I'd like you to join me in re-referring this bill to the committee so we can clean it up, make some common sense decisions about whether or not this package is the right thing for Oregon. Only then will the best intentions of this body actually create good policy. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion on the motion. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I rise to urge you
to the motion.
To the motion. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise to urge you to vote no on this motion. This is the first package coming out of Ways and Means this year, and certainly didn't intend this to be the first entry into the laissez-faire process, but we are in a crisis situation. The timing of the bond sales that we are facing require us to take action now if we are going to take advantage of this opportunity. And I would just like to say, I know it's very popular right now to quote our new president. And our new president yesterday said, "Do not let the perfect become the enemy of the essential." And colleagues, I would argue that this is essential for us to pass and to pass it today. If you look in the headlines of the papers around the country today, you will see this. Jobless rate at 26-year high. Jobless rate at 26-year high. These are not normal times. We did not follow a normal process. I'll be the first one to admit it. We were given a list that was developed, but colleagues, these lists were developed from agencies that have a backlog of deferred maintenance projects that reaches into hundreds of millions of dollars. These are projects that have not been funded by this body. Year after year after year after year, the backlog is built up. We have not taken care of our state assets. The property that we are entrusted to, we have not taken care of. The projects for our university system, projects for our community colleges, were projects that were in the governor's recommended budget. So what we're talking about is moving up the work that's already planned for 2009-11, moving up to this year to get the jobs going this year in our communities. So to say that this is somehow a mysterious list of projects that no one ever seen before in their lives is simply not true. These are projects that have been on the agency's desired deferred maintenance list for years, colleagues. These are projects that have been on the university system's list. You can check the governor's recommended budget. You can walk right down, and you'll see it. You'll see OIT. You'll see Western. You'll see PSU. Go to the community college part of the budget, and you'll see all the community projects they were hoping to get done. And we're moving these up, and we're getting Oregonians to work today. Not 2 months from now, 6 months from now, 8 months from now. We're going to get them to work in February, in March, in April. We're going to get jobs in our community. We get people getting back to work, and we start to turn around and address this crisis that we're facing. Colleagues, I urge a no vote on this motion. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion on the motion, Representative Galizio.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
To the motion?
To the motion, thank you. I think the co-chair made some excellent points. And I respect the desire to do due diligence on the part of the minority leader, and that's what all of us are trying to do. However, if anyone has been looking at the newspapers, you would see a discussion of this. But more importantly, in this building, on January 20th, the lists were distributed of all the projects. On January 21st, a public hearing was held. On January 22nd, a public hearing and a work session were held. It was returned to the full committee. Another work session was held on the 23rd. It was debated on the Senate floor, came back over, and here we are. We have to do due diligence, but we also have to remember that the clock is ticking to that February 10th bond sale. And people who are out of work now need assistance. This package that we're talking about will only be less than 10% of the entire bonding capacity that the debt advisory service says that we have. So it is a defining moment of sorts, but we're going to have several defining moments, I think, during this legislative session when we talk about a transportation package and other things. This is not the black budget of the Pentagon. All of us have the list. It's been vetted. We absolutely had public testimony. As a matter of fact, there are a couple of members of the minority party who are on that committee, one of whom testified in a very articulate manner in support of the package. We don't need to refer this back. We've had plenty of debate. The time is for action, and I urge your no vote.
Further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Representative Hanna, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yes. Colleagues, we actually all do have to get up and look at ourselves in the mirror and decide, really? Was I included when this list was created? You got to be able to answer that. Really? Did the Senate President call me in and ask me specifically for the list of items in my district? Really? In the times that these things had open public meeting, was anything changed? Or really, and honestly has this been pressed down upon us, not vetted through us. We may hear later today yet that some parts of this bill have been fixed. We might hear that later today. We may hear that the most outrageous of the projects are going away. That a list that came out yesterday afternoon, deemed by some as inappropriate, or as in fact deemed by some not worthy of borrowing money, not worthy of bonding on. The reality is, colleagues, we're about to vote on a bill that will provide bonding authority for money that our own state agency, DAS, has admitted it doesn't need. Was I clear? We're going to vote today on a bonding package giving bonding authority to an agency for which that agency has said, we don't need the money. The projects aren't worthy. How does that sound to you? You go to the bank and borrow money for things you don't need? Do you pay debt for issues or items you don't have or want? There's a lot of confusion in this package, and there's a lot of confusion about the limit of the bonding. And I would also like to point out that this is the second bill on consecutive days to reach this floor for which I have said hastily presented, pushing, trying to put speed ahead of quality. 2 days in a row, colleagues, we're having that discussion. Just because we're moving quickly doesn't mean we're moving with quality. Oregonians absolutely deserve a much more deliberative conversation on policy, especially when it is one that will require them, those people who pay the taxes, those people who provide the revenue we're going to spend, those people upon whom we will further encumber the revenue they generate through their work, through the jobs they provide, those are the very people who need to be assured that the conversation we're having includes their thoughts and their wishes and that our decisions meet their needs. Colleagues, please join me in re-referring this bill to the Ways and Means Committee. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those are the opinion that Senate Bill 5562 should be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. We'll vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. The motion having not received the required majority is declared failed. Further discussion on the bill. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I want to see some smiles in this chamber here. It's a great day for Oregon, and if John Maynard Keynes was with us today, he'd be smiling too. This is a direct injection of cash into the economy. It's not about the long-term fiscal policy. We are doing this now because tough times call for bold action. And let's be clear, it has worked before. A short-term spur of investment from the public sector has been before a key factor
in spurring economic growth, especially in what may very well be a deflationary economy. And this project, this list of projects gets it right. It's lots of little. These aren't projects that are sexy. These aren't necessarily projects to write home about. But let's be clear, each one of these projects represents a paycheck. Each one of these projects represents goods and services that will be bought and sold in our economy. And each time that happens, there's what's called a multiplier effect. That the construction materials that are purchased for the job, the can of paint, the concrete, each one of these things gets spent and recycled over and over and over again in our economy, creating far more jobs and far more investment than just the initial $175 million. For a stimulus, that's the real trick, and something that putting money into the economy through rebates or tax cuts doesn't accomplish as well. For the wonky among us, I would refer you to the 2004 article by Johnson, Parker, and Soleil in the National Bureau of Economic Research on household expenditures and the income tax rebates of 2001, which showed very clearly that when rebates or checks are given directly back to households, that much of that is saved and not spent in the economy, and you are actually getting less bang for your buck than by having the public sector make a direct investment in job creation. That's exactly what this bill does, is it ensures that every penny that this state invests will go directly towards spurring the economy, having that multiplier effect, and creating more jobs and investment than we otherwise would be able to. We need the money now to generate jobs, and this bill gives us the authorization to do that. These are tough times. I urge the body to vote yes on this measure. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question to the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
The carrier yields and notes that we're starting this session off with the, I'm not going to alert people in advance, but I will gladly take the question.
He does.
Thank you. I'm sorry I did not get this to you ahead of time, but I was wondering if there, we were hearing about how this is going to spur the economy, and I'm hoping he's referring to Oregon specifically, and I imagine he is, but will there be a screening process to ensure that Oregon workers who are legal residents of the state will be getting this job?
Yeah, thank you for that question. I wish everyone in this body could have been present at the discussion that we had in the Capital Construction Committee, where accountability was absolutely number one in terms of what we were focused on. The short answer to your question is yes, we have to follow sort of the legal guidelines, and there's going to be oversight by DAS, and they're going to report back to the legislature. And these are, you know, with community colleges and the university system and all of these state agencies, it was made very clear, it was made explicitly that these people are going to be coming back to us for their operations budgets. So on May 1st, when they come back to us and tell us how many jobs were created, was it done on time, that's, and what kind of accountability was there, we're going to be able to react accordingly. So.
Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. You spurred on another question, if I may ask another.
Further sure. Question of the carrier, does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you. You mentioned a tracking process that DAS would have, and I guess to ensure some sort of accountability, which is great. But these jobs that are being counted, 3,000, I believe, are they new jobs? Are they short-term jobs? Are they going to be, I guess I'm wondering if they're going to be like the same 200 workers moving from one job to the next, and how they're counting this as a job created. Thank you.
Thank you for that question. This is an excellent question. This package, the job stimulus package, is for both job creation, we hope to create upwards of 3,000 jobs, and for some job retention. When people are out of work, even if they're state workers, they're still paying unemployment benefits. So this is going to do both. You know, it's really unfortunate the newspapers have focused on the 0.25% of projects that have been referred to over and over again. I would just urge everyone in this body, before you push the button, to take a look at the 17 community colleges that are going to, you know, we have incredible enrollment explosion all over the state. So training our workers in these buildings that are going to be fixed is part and parcel of this package. So the short answer, although I've already given you a long answer, is both short and long-term jobs.
Right. Thank
you. Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
I don't think I really got a question answer to the question about ensuring legal residents, and i.e. citizens and, illegal immigrants are getting these jobs. I just want to make sure Oregonians are getting these jobs, and that I've looked through these projects, and it's hard for me to see that it wouldn't be merely 200 people repeating the jobs moving from one to the next. But first off, Mr. Speaker, I don't support this legislation for a number of reasons, and ironically, to be on the safe side, maybe I need to declare a potential conflict, because it's possible that my company may benefit from one of these projects. But aside from the projects on the list, and we've talked about, there's a lot of short-term and long-term jobs, according to the good representative from Tigard. Thank you. There's one project in my district. It's a restroom at Shampooey Park, and I love Shampooey Park. This mural on the wall is depicting an event that happened there. But it just so happens that a nonprofit group recently raised just about that amount of money, $335,000, for an exhibit. And wouldn't it be great if they could use that same group of individuals that say, hey, we've got to have a restroom here, to raise non-tax dollars to accomplish that and not put the state further into debt. And as a small owner, somebody who obviously does some public works projects, I have a very hard time with some of the messages that we're sending with this legislation. First, I see it as we're sending the message that socialism is better to stimulate the economy than capitalism. And I think Adam Smith would not be smiling today. The private sector, I believe, is much better equipped to create jobs than government, which has a record. They're infamous for waste and inefficiency. These jobs on this list were making work, doing a list of projects that weren't important enough to do when times were good. In this case, we'll be spending around $60,000 per job, and many of them will already have been employed by the government. So this isn't a private sector stimulus so much. And for these short-term jobs, we're producing long-term debt. We're going into long-term debt to produce $60,000 jobs. And by the way, after a couple of weeks of building that bathroom, do the workers go back in the unemployment line? If we give back private companies and people some of their own money, they could create jobs. They could choose who to bail out. And without spending a lot of taxpayer money. So yeah, I believe it would be much better to reduce taxes, not necessarily rebates, but reduce their taxes now so they get it now and spend it now. And they will have, it'd be better to have the incentives to give to the private sector to make this happen. They could stimulate the economy. Message number two that I think that we're sending is that government should pick the winners and should pick the losers. And in this time, hey, construction workers win. That's great. But who's going to help all the workers laid off from Country Coach and Macy's and numerous small businesses that weren't large enough to make the headlines? if we leave it up to the free market, I believe we could all win. And yes, I'm glad that government does actually contract out some of these jobs. But it's those companies, not the government, that keep that multiplier going. Message number three that we're sending is that debt's a good thing. My kids, all my life, with growing up, I was told, and I tell my kids, running up your credit card is not a good thing. Going into debt is not a good thing. But now, apparently, it's okay.
Representative Thatcher, your time has expired. Does someone yield? Representative Olson yields.
Thank you, Representative. And so 11 years from now, my now 7-year-old son and other Oregonians will have to work many years to pay off the $10 million in annual interest payments on this particular debt. Another message we're sending is that we should spend now and save later. And I think taxpayers expect more from us. Here we are, 4 weeks into this session, and we're doing nothing but spend and spend and going deeper and deeper into debt. We're not showing Oregonians that we are managing their money wisely in the state budget. We have done nothing to show people that we are cutting the overhead, we're cutting the non-essential programs, or that we're canceling trips and conferences, or maybe looking at going to a 4-day work week for everybody. Pay freezes. You know, that's what the private sector is having to do right now. If they're not already laying off people, they're doing what they need to survive, pare down, cut out the perks, and maybe even at times some of the basics, and so should state government. And finally, I'm all for helping the environment whenever possible. And I hear time and again from my constituents that the only kind of green they want from their jobs right now is the kind that they can fold up and stick in their wallets. And that's why I urge you to vote no.
And Representative Thatcher, did you want the potential conflict that you referred to specifically noted for the record? She does. I might also, since Representative Thatcher raised it, it may be helpful for all of us colleagues, a reference to state statute in terms of potential conflict of interest law. ORS 244.020 sets forth the defined terms for purposes of government ethics laws of Oregon. The statute sets forth the specific definition of potential conflict of interest, and this is that definition. Quote, potential conflict of interest means any action or any decision or recommendation by a person acting in a capacity as a public official, the effect of which could be to the private, pecuniary benefit or detriment of the person or person's relative or a business with which the person or the person's relative is associated. Business, then, is further defined in ORS 244.020 sub 2 as, quote, any corporation, partnership, proprietorship, firm, enterprise, franchise, association, organization, self-employed individual, and any other legal entity operated for economic gain, but excluding any income-producing not-for-profit corporation that is tax-exempt under Section 501C of the Internal Revenue Code, with which a public official or relative of the public official is associated only as a member or board director or in a non-remunerative capacity. So that is, you're now aware of the law. As some of the training that you received earlier in the session has indicated, there are black and white areas and there are shades of gray. So you now have that information. Further discussion, Representative Kennemer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill, please.
I'm sorry, to the bill.
Thank you. You know, the economy is likely the most serious issue facing our state. And I've been hearing, as I suspect all of you have, virtually every day from constituents who have that heavy on their mind and remind me of the impact that this recession is having on their lives. And I would like to say I do appreciate the efforts of leadership to pass an economic stimulus bill this early in the session.
However, the legislature did not take the time, in my view, to adequately vet the projects in this package to really determine their ability to effectively create jobs and to sustain jobs into the future. And I think many of us feel the projects were not vetted to us members, much less the general public. In the legislature's rush to pass this bill, we're excluding worthy projects that offer lasting value and true job creation. For example, the community college in my district did not get an opportunity to participate in capital construction because of, quote, a faxing error. Yes, apparently a faxing error caused $1.7 million in shovel-ready economic development dollars to not go to Clackamas Community College in this package. I would remind us that many of the newspapers, justifiably in my mind, have editorialized harshly against this package. This is a weak start, both in process and also in content. I think we're all in agreement. We need to stimulate the economy in Oregon. I think we can. And frankly, I think we can do better. Thank you for your time.
Further discussion, Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill?
To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I want to just step back for a minute, and you know, the good representative from Southern Oregon brought up what some of our forefathers would think today. And certainly, they probably never even thought of $1 million or $1 billion. But I think what's more important is what the people of Oregon today think, what the person who's losing their health care is thinking, what the person who is perhaps losing their unemployment insurance is thinking, and what is the future generations that are now trying to enter the workforce thinking. Colleagues, I've heard a lot of talk about debt, and frankly, we balance our budget. We're required to. That's what this body does. This package that we're about to vote on today is an investment. It's an investment in turning this economy around, and I think it's fairly well recognized across this country that we need fast action in these times to prevent a further spiraling down of our economy. And government is the only, not the only, but is the best positioned right now to intercede in our economy and try to turn this thing around. The unemployed cannot wait. They could be losing their homes if they don't get back to work. As a citizen elected to represent my district, I cannot in good conscience sit back and wait and watch this body miss the deadline of the February 10th bond sales to put this economy and to put some money back on the streets that will potentially provide jobs and income which the state relies on to fund its programs and its services for the needy as well. Colleagues, I urge and I vote on this bill. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Wingard.
Thank you. Perfect timing. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill?
To the bill.
Colleagues, I just want to make everyone in the body very clear about what this plan entails. This plan would allow the state of Oregon to borrow more money to pay for projects that will now cost upwards of twice as much because we borrowed to pay for them. Now, I can support borrowing for capital improvements or borrowing money for projects that give us a positive net return on investments over time. I cannot, however, support borrowing money to pay for projects that will not even outlast the life of the bond, projects for which we'll still be paying long after their useful life has dwindled. How long? One example, colleagues, just one, is the Hillsborough Armory. This package would approve $25,000 for remodeling work in the Hillsborough Armory, a building that has already been planned for demolition. Seriously, we're going to borrow money on a 15-year bond to pay for remodel work in a building that is scheduled to be demolished. This is essential. This is what happens when you rush a huge package through the system. Whether it was because the state didn't take the time to talk to Washington County, or whether it's because someone decided it simply didn't matter if we were flushing those dollars down the drain. Either way, this is just one example in a sea of projects that were not carefully crafted and certainly not put through any sort of test or criteria. I urge you to vote no.
Further discussion, Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, today this vote for me is particularly difficult. We are faced with unprecedented unemployment, and the long lines for benefits and at our food banks speak to the immediate need to get help and get people working again. And I must admit that in looking at these projects, many are in my district. That's no surprise when you consider that the Capitol Mall is in my district as well as Western Oregon University. If I thought this was a short-term problem, I might support this short-term solution. But unfortunately, I believe we are faced with a profound long-term economic downturn. This proposal for short-term jobs will be paid for with long-term bonding. Future budgets will be forced to pay these bonds long after the jobs we get today are gone. It's a good thing that our debt capacity is good, but we must be very strategic in using this vehicle. Instead of short-term fixes to community college buildings, let's get busy authorizing the community college capital construction package. This package has projects to build buildings which grow our ability to provide direct job training to the unemployed. And we need to use our bonding capacity for revitalizing our transportation infrastructure, providing high-wage jobs and long-term benefits to the state. We are faced with unprecedented economic disaster, which may be with us for a long time. This short-term fix is not the answer, and despite the benefits to my district, regretfully, I cannot support it. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Honorable colleagues, I rise to speak in opposition to Senate Bill 5526. I do this although my district is scheduled to receive millions of dollars in this bill. But that's not my job. My job is to be responsible. And there's 100% of these projects do not achieve the objectives stated by the legislative leadership of ensuring job creation all over Oregon. And I do not see how it helps individuals or families recovering from our economic recession. It only puts us more in debt by borrowing $176 million to provide housekeeping and maintenance on state facilities for which the agencies have already received taxpayers' money to maintain these facilities. I believe that the advocates for this bill believe that it may help. But history and experts do not support the theory that we can tax and borrow our way out of a recession. I will not go through the items that you've already heard about on this list, which do not warrant our real investment in our recovery and will not create jobs. Let's talk about how we're borrowing and maximizing our credit to help recover from a recession. The smartest man I've ever known was my father. He worked hard, paid for all four of his children to attend college without loans. He owned a small plumbing supply business. My father lived through the Great Depression. And based upon those life experiences, I do not believe my father ever used a credit card for personal or business expenses. He paid cash. He did not believe in going into debt. Governing Magazine selected Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels as its 2008 Public Official of the Year. Governor Daniels expressed that his secret in turning
Indiana's economy around, listen to this, was he spent less money than he took in. I'll repeat. Indiana's governor's secret was he spent less money than he took in. The advocates of Senate Bill 5526 did not learn the lessons of my father or governor of Indiana. They want to maximize the state's debt. They are using debt to recover from a recession created by debt. The federal government can print money. The state of Oregon cannot print money. And we'll have to repay this loan with annual payments of about $20 million for 15 to 20 years. That's going to come out of education, public safety, and human services budget for 15 to 20 years. And colleagues, let's be honest with the Oregon citizens and taxpayers. This is a partisan bill. It was created without any input by the minority and people from districts that were not being heard from. And it contains no oversight, performance measures, or escape clauses. And also, let's be honest, the executive branch and legislative leadership are rushing this bill through to take the bonds to market at a scheduled sale in mid-February, I guess February the 10th. And the executive branch has delayed the next revenue forecast to late February. Why? So the investors don't look at the state's worsening fiscal situation when determining where to buy the bonds? Colleagues, is this legal? Is it ethical? Is it wise? I think this bill will subject us to the same complaints that people are having over lack of oversight with the Troubled Access Relief Program. Oregon is creating the same credibility issues with Senate Bill 5526. After I prepared this speech, we learned today that I'm right. We have items on this project that we can't even do. It's not right. It's not legal. It's not ethical. So why on earth are we thinking of passing a package that even isn't financially solvent, good, or even going to be implemented? We got bills in there not going to be implemented. I urge you to join me and vote no. Then let's work together like this body did in the last session on the Rainy Day Fund. Let's work together on a bipartisan bill without the pork and non-essential projects, and let's create a bill which really helps Oregon citizens and families and makes common sense. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, even though the representative didn't ask me that he would know. Yes, I will pick.
He does.
Will, I have not heard that I recall testimony today about our current debt limit. Will this package put Oregon's debt limit over the advised level of Oregon's Debt Advisory Commission?
No. We had very compelling testimony from Laura Lockwood McCall, who is the director of the State Debt Management Division. And it was some of the only good news that I think I've heard about our fiscal situation and the state of the economy in a long time. She reminded the committee that because of the changes in PERS that were done in 2003, that compared to all other 49 states, our total debt, indebtedness, and liabilities, including pension obligations, places Oregon third best in the nation. Third best in the nation. And when you look at all the liabilities, and there are people who are sitting here today that deserve credit for that change in PERS. So.
Representative Edwards.
Another question on the carrier.
Further question, does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
I think that there was some concern raised about how the community college project list was developed. Could you expand on that process?
Yes. I've worked at a community college for 15 years and have watched the difficulty of having 17 community colleges try to deal with deferred maintenance and capacity and small operating budgets, yet increasing enrollment. And to their credit, the 17 community college leaders got together and they agreed. It's not peace in the Middle East, but it's pretty close. So that's how this list came forward to us.
Thank you.
Representative Edwards.
To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I rise in support of this bill today. It was mentioned earlier or asked of us by the good representative from Southern Oregon what our forefathers would wonder as they look down on us today, what we are doing with this great gift that they have bequeathed to us. And my answer to them would be trying to maintain it. This is a defining moment, but it is a defining moment of a larger defining session. And I think that since we're all so fond of quoting our president, this is going to be a session that is going to be mixed, no doubt, with a little bit of no, we can't because of our budget situation. But there's also going to be many opportunities for a good dose of yes, we can. Should we or should we not put Oregonians back to work during these tough economic times? We all know that there's never been a social program more successful than a job. And while I will admit that this list is not exactly as I would have created it if I were the sole person in charge of crafting the list, I don't think that that is reason enough not to recognize the worthiness of the package as a whole. And I will admit that, and I think we all know that in politics, we don't always get credit for disaster averted or disaster mitigated. And clearly, this package alone is not going to right the ship. But it's going to be one of many efforts this session to put Oregon on a better path to the future. And the lack of sufficiency of this package alone does not merit its failure. With unemployment on the rise, families are losing jobs, which means that families are losing health insurance. And when families lose jobs and they struggle, it puts more burden on the state, it increases our costs, and it makes it more difficult to do the basics like keep our schools open. So we need, clearly, colleagues, we need to put Oregonians back to work. This is going to be one of many efforts. And I hope that the voices of no, we can't do not prevail, because it is the voices of no, we can't that have left so many Oregonians without health insurance, that have left our schools underfunded, and have left us with this list of, this very list of deferred maintenance projects that we're voting on here today. So, Mr. Speaker, I say to you, yes, we should, and yes, we can today start putting Oregonians back to work. Thank you.
Further discussion. Representative Bruin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, as you know, Oregonians are an intrepid lot. Give them the tools, and they will finish the job. Give them the right tools, and they can beat this recession. And so the question that arises before us today is, this bill, Mr. Speaker, the right tool? Well, I find it interesting, and it's already been alluded to a little earlier, I find it interesting that this bill is based on an economic theory that until very recently was largely relegated to the ash heap of history. It's the idea that if private economies, if private market isn't spending, that we can make up for that on by spending public dollars. And I think that theory is absolutely worthy of debate. I'm glad we're having a debate. And of course we're debating this theory on a massive, almost a breathtaking scale at the national level.
The question, though, is not a national question, it's a state question. And does the state $177 million package that we're proposing today, does it rise to the theory that we're deliberating, Mr. Speaker? And I would argue that while the dollars of the package are big, the scale is not, and therein lies at least a big part of the problem. This package, $177 million package, construction package, Mr. Speaker, would, and my good friend from Happy Valley would know this, basically pay for two really nice office buildings in the Pearl District. Just to give you a sense of perspective, that's basically what we're buying here. We're buying two really nice office building projects in the Pearl District. Now, there's a benefit to that, colleagues. There's an economic benefit for sure, but is that benefit beneficial to the entire state? And I would argue that it is not. We are, you know, long story short, bottom line is the state just doesn't have the bandwidth, it doesn't have the capacity to borrow and spend our way to a stimulus package that positively affects Oregonians for the long term, maybe not even for the short term. So the question is, what can we do? If this doesn't work, if this isn't the right package, what can we do to not just stimulate the economy in the short term, but hopefully restructure it in the long term to make Oregon a better place for long-term investment and long-term job creation? Parenthetically, I would throw out there for your consideration, colleagues, that ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, I think is what the acronym stands for, they rank Oregon 36th when it comes to the regulatory hurdles that Oregonians face, Oregon business faces. That's a real issue. That's a real issue that we have to consider as we're talking about creating jobs for the long term. Should Oregon be number one? No. Should it be top 10? Maybe. Can we at least make a goal of top 20 as our goal? Certainly not 36. Another interesting fact, what comes from the OECD, the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development, which is obviously a world organization, ranks Oregon as having the highest income tax, business income tax, in the world. Not in the nation, but in the world. How do we get there? Well, after years of other countries sort of bridging the gap, if you will, the United States, which used to be a real tax advantage nation, is now the second highest nation when it comes to corporate income taxes after Japan. When you add on Oregon's 6.6%, we now have the highest corporate income tax in the world. Now, of course, I need to be honest and say there are some states in the country, Mr. Speaker, that have higher income taxes than Oregon. So yes, with the exception of a few states like New York and California, that's the only exception. But I think, you know, Mr. Speaker and colleagues, we have to consider these broader items as we're looking at restructuring. We absolutely should look at private-public partnerships. If we don't, as a state, have the bandwidth, how about those private-public partnerships? How about leveraging private monies with state monies in the form of 50% tax credits for real improvement projects? These are some things, Mr. Speaker, that I hope we get to as we continue deliberating this session. So we'll do this project, Mr. Speaker. It will have a little impact, but my fear is that we'll get it done. There'll be a few jobs created for a little while. It will be a collective shrug of our shoulders on how beneficial it was, but we won't forget it, of course, because we'll be paying for it for the next 20 years. So to sort of conclude here, to follow on the good representative from Southeast Portland's point that he made earlier, you have to ask the question, are we all Keynesians now? I hope the answer is no, and I would urge you to vote no. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. Colleagues, our state treasurer just this week reminded us of the importance of sound fiscal policy. He told the House Revenue Committee that I sit on Tuesday that bonding is a tool that must be used very carefully with a great deal of discretion. He told us that, like a family, it is not a bad thing to have a credit card, but if we max out our credit card, it becomes a real danger. Further, he told us that in tough economic times, people look to bonding as an economic catalyst, but we need to know how much is too much. I agree with the state treasurer that bonding can be an appropriate way to fund government. When used responsibly, bonding is an effective tool for financing major capital construction projects that provide lasting value to the state and its citizens. Colleagues, the package that we are voting on today is not a responsible use of bonding. even if we are increasing the state's debt in the name of economic stimulus. While there are some worthy capital construction projects in the package, it is a big mistake to use bonding to pay for projects that won't last the life of the bond. I could simply support this package and tell my constituents that I created jobs, but I couldn't do it with a clear conscience. My constituents sent me to Salem to boost the economy and create jobs. But they also sent me here to make sure that their tax dollars are spent wisely. I believe it's a mistake to spend a grand payback total of $255 million to create what we think will be 1,500 short-term jobs. Colleagues, there are better ways to create jobs, especially in rural Oregon. Rather than wasting millions in taxpayer dollars, we could put rural Oregonians back to work in our forests. Rather than passing this package, the state government could endorse the Western Oregon Revision Plan, plan revision that would revitalize our natural resources industries. This package would maybe create, the stimulus package would maybe create 1,500 short-term jobs. Whopper would create 3,400 long-term family wage jobs without increasing debt and locking up our state budget. Colleagues, there are better ways to create jobs. We can do better than the package that is on the floor today. Let's reject this package and get to work on true job creation for our constituents. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Call. To the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I speak today in support of this entire stimulus package. In 1966, Mount Hood Community College opened its doors. Soon thereafter, my father attended Mount Hood, completing 2 years there before he went on to graduate from Portland State. My father was one of the first on a path that would be followed by many East Multnomah County residents. My younger brother, my two older sisters, and I all attended Mount Hood before completing our degrees at Portland State. At its inception, Mount Hood represented a commitment to my community, a commitment that all persons who were willing to work hard and pledge themselves to the rigors of higher learning would not be barred from learning by mere expense or inconvenience. Mount Hood is emblematic of a belief that Oregon's future is brightest only when all of its citizens have the opportunity to realize their full potential. Mount Hood is not only a benefit to my district and to our region. As part of our statewide system of higher education, Mount Hood is an asset to our state. Mount Hood is a shining example of what our state is at its best. And it is an institution of hope and opportunity in the lives of East Multnomah County residents as constant and as emblematic as the mountain for which it is named. To speak of a community college in such exalted terms may seem unfamiliar. Such accolades are often reserved for the universities or even for the Ivy League. I speak in such terms because Mount Hood Community College altered the trajectory of my life substantially and for the better, because Mount Hood is an asset to my district, and because Mount Hood, like all of our community colleges, greatly benefits our state. I use such terms because I hope to augment the rightful arguments in support of stimulus with the necessity to reinvest in our community colleges, beginning by completing maintenance that has been too long deferred. Yes, this investment will create jobs now. Yes, this investment will stimulate our economy. About these things, there can be little doubt. But more, we are reinvesting in our future, reinvesting in assets that have been left neglected and whose values have been underestimated. It goes without saying that Mount Hood, like all of our community colleges, cannot continue in its mission if its buildings are shuttered, in a state of disrepair, or when students with disabilities are denied access to places of learning because facilities are inadequate to meet their needs. Today, over 40 years after Mount Hood opened its doors to my family and community, we are not just voting on a stimulus package. We are reaffirming our commitment to our higher education system, a system of higher learning that provides access to traditional and non-traditional students alike.
In making these investments today, we will create quality jobs when they are most needed. Jobs that pay a living wage, jobs that employ tradespeople and skilled laborers, jobs that create opportunities for training and capacity building within disadvantaged communities. But more, community colleges are engines of workforce development and incubators of small business, and the investments we make there will benefit our state far into the future. In this package, we will be renovating and repairing facilities that house classrooms needed to create the highly trained workforce necessary to compete for high-skilled jobs, the very jobs we hope to bring to Oregon in the years to come. Because this package represents immediate and long-term economic investment, I urge my colleagues today to join me in supporting it. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I have yet to hear anyone on this floor say anything from their constituency. I have been very blessed with the fact that I have a lady in Medford that's a business person that has sliced and diced both of these proposals. One is the state stimulus package. The other one is the Main Street incentive package. She writes, who decides what projects? Answers. For the state stimulus package, state agencies and state legislators. Main Street, Oregon homeowners and business owners. Second question, what kind of projects? State stimulus package, deferred maintenance on state properties. Main Street, improvements to homes and businesses throughout Oregon. Third question, how long to complete? State stimulus, 1 to 3 months. Main Street, projects of various lengths that may be long in duration. Next question, when would they start? State stimulus, as soon as February. Main Street, no later than September. Next question, who will do the work? State stimulus, this is very important. Whomever chosen by the bidding process can't by law require them to be Oregon-based companies. The Main Street contractors hired by Oregonians would more than likely be based in Oregon and be your neighbor. Will government workers be involved in the bidding and hiring process? State stimulus package? Yes. And then she writes, taking time that could be used doing their actual jobs. Main Street? No. Will government workers be involved in overseeing the projects? She writes yes on the state stimulus package, again, taking time that they could be doing their real jobs. Main Street? No. Will completed projects add to the state tax revenues? State stimulus package? No. All buildings to be renovated are off the tax rolls. Main Street? Yes. Improving the value of residential and business properties will add to the tax rolls. Next question, will the plan cost the state? She says yes on the state, $117 million, which she has down. However, the debt will be spread out over the next 20 years, making a full cost of more like $315 million. The Main Street, Oregonians will receive a tax credit for 50% of the cost of the improvements, but it will be spread out over a five-year period. Next question, are any of the projects green? State, two solar energy systems and refurbishing of some lighting and heating systems. Main Street, the tax credit will increase to 100% for green projects and again will be dispersed over a five-year period. Next question, will this help local banks? State stimulus package, no. Oregon state government will be adding to its current bonding indebtedness and creating more interest obligations for future budgets. Main Street, yes. Property owners will borrow from regional and national banks to finance these projects. thereby stimulating the private sector. Next question, will this help local government? State stimulus package, no. Main Street, yes. With additional fees and permits and SDCs and tax receipts, struggling local governments will benefit from this economic stimulus. Very well done, I thought, by one of my constituents. It's very interesting, colleagues, that it was spending and indebtedness that got us into this mess. And yet we continue to spend and go into debt to correct it. I'm amazed that we are going down this path. People here on this floor have talked about what our forefathers thought.
Representative Girard yields.
Thank you, Representative. They've talked about what our forefathers would have done or would have thought. I can't answer that because I've never talked to our forefathers. But I have read some things that they've written. To preserve the independence, our independence, we must not let our rulers load us with perpetual debt. I repeat that. To preserve our independence, we must not let our rulers load us with perpetual debt. That, colleagues, was Thomas Jefferson. Vote no for Oregon's future.
Further discussion, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And while I heard the moan from my colleague,
is this to the bill, Representative Gilliam?
To the bill, Mr. Speaker, I'm sorry. While I heard the moan from my colleague from Milwaukee as I rose, I want to remind her that I can go a lot quicker if folks in the chamber will stop humming "I Am Woman" while I'm speaking. How appropriate today, Mr. Speaker, that we are firing up our steamroller again today as we prepare to fire up steamrollers all across our state. Maybe it's just the fact that I'm a veteran now, but I sense that this bill may pass. Nonetheless, we soldier on. And to my colleagues from Ashland and the Emerald Empire, you have a good point about the bond sale. But timing indeed, because I would be interested in knowing if those more wise than I am know of a worse time to go into a bond market to float bonds to try to sell them. So bond timing indeed. To me, now is the time to go into the small business incentive business. But we're not going to do that today. I want to be clear that I don't doubt anybody's sincerity in this room. Everybody in this room wants Oregon to go back to work. How we do that is where my smiling, I'm sorry to say, stops. Because so far, Mr. Speaker, your side of the aisle's arguments to me are hollow. They're superficial, and they are not even temporary, they're flawed. I would say, with the possible exception of the commitment to community colleges, because I believe they are the educational arm in this state that is ready, flexible, and could actually put people through quick training and put them back to work. But nonetheless, the overall strategy seems to me, and to anybody watching closely, despite what the carrier's sort of chronological list was, it seems rushed. You're not going to be here when this thing is picked apart later. You'll be long gone. Well, I take that back. The representative from Milwaukee and Boring might be here after his graduation. But most of us are not going to be here. So before you brush aside my caucus leader's comments about our forefathers, which many of you have, remember that you won't be here, but your name is going to be engraved on a plate on your desk. It matters what we do today for the future. It's more than the smiles. It's more than these brief congratulations that the press may give you today. So my caution is this. As you vote for this, I hope you'll think about the idea that we may be very well sacrificing the future on the altar of the immediate. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I want to support the bill for two reasons. One was the nurses that came into my office yesterday and talked to me about commitments I could make to them, all constituents, about Chemeketa Community College and the programs there. There's provisions in this bill that will help them be healthy in the building that they're working in and learning. They're going to be helping with our rural nursing shortage very soon. I talked to them about revenue. I talked to them about borrowing. I talked to them about the cost and the things they may have to endure if I said, yes, I'll help you with your project, because the two cannot be decoupled. I can't promise them, yes, I'm going to help you with your tuitions, your opportunity grants, your Chemeketa Community College budgets, and those buildings, and then pretend it's for free. So I had to look them in the eye and say, these are the other things I'm going to do. I'm going to need you to be there for me at some point if I do these other things. This was one of them. The other piece about Keynesian economics and priming the pump and our forefathers, my great-grandfather killed himself during the Great Depression. Killed himself. My grandfather, in the eighth grade, quit school. He joined the Civilian Conservation Corps, which was created by FDR out of debt spending, public works. It was make work. He dug trails. He created camps in Cascadia. There were 10 kids. That job and what his brothers got to do fed and saved their lives. So, you know, I don't know if Keynesian economics is the only strategy. I don't know if it's the right way. I know that I would very unlikely not be here if not for the CCC in Lebanon, Oregon, creating some make work in those timber trails that employed my grandfather. Built a high school in the Works Progress Administration in Coos Bay that I went to. It's tough times for everybody to understand how to help solve this problem, but it's sincere and it's genuine across the board, both parties, on what the right way to deal with this problem is. Thank you very much.
Further discussion, Representative Widener.
To the bill, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
Colleagues, as we get ready to vote on this and listening to my colleague over here to my right, this bill probably is going to pass today. And as leadership, Mr. Speaker, the direction you take your party is a party that, or is a line that you can go. But one of the things we have to do is answer to our constituents when we leave this building today. And I ask everyone here, every colleague, because I know you've all received emails on this like I have. I have not received one email telling me to vote for this package out of my district. I have tons and tons of emails coming in. If you're finding the chairs are split, this is something you have to carry back to your district and to your constituents. And know that you will wear this vote, you will wear your next election cycle. So I ask that you keep your constituents in mind as you get ready to vote for this bill. Are you going to do it for your party? Are you going to do the right thing and do what's right for your district and what your district wants you to do? These are things that we have to look at. We're not down here for our party. We're down here for the people of Oregon. When we look at doing projects and bonding, they need to be long-term projects. In my communities, the people are suffering from high water rates, high electric rates. If we're doing projects, we need to look at ways to help out with the local sewer systems to drive their water rates down. We need to help them build up their reservoirs. These are projects that are worthwhile to bond. I have projects in this bill, okay, that'll create jobs for maybe 2 days. We have numerous projects spread out for one contractor to work for 2 days. How does that really create stimulus? We will be paying for 20 years on $3,700 to replace windows. Is this something you can take to your people in your district and be proud of? That's something I want you to ask yourself, because those are questions that are going to come up in your debates. So I'm urging you to vote no on this and do the right thing for the people of Oregon, not for your party. Vote for the people of Oregon. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May I ask a question of Representative Edwards, please? David Edwards.
Representative Buckley poses a question of Representative David Edwards. Do you yield?
I do, Mr. Speaker.
He does.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Representative Edwards. Representative Edwards, there was a question brought up over a project in Hillsborough concerning the armory, and I know you've researched that and looked into that. Could you please clarify for the House what you found?
Yes, thank you, Representative, for that question. With all due respect to the representative from Tigard, the demise of the Hillsborough Armory is greatly exaggerated. I have here before me an email summary of the conversation between a member of our Legislative Fiscal Office staff and General Caldwell, head of the Oregon Military Department. The project is part of a long-term project that is on the National Guard's long-range construction plan for the year 2015, and construction would be completed in the year 2017. According to the general, recent county plans for the fairgrounds indicate that the property will be used in perpetuity and not a repeat, not demolished.
Thank you, Representative. To the bill, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To begin with, I would like to offer a gentle comment to the new representative from Yamhill and Polk counties to insinuate that any member of this House is acting in the benefit of a political party and not for their constituents and not for the state of Oregon is unacceptable. It's absolutely unacceptable. To the rest of my colleagues, I'd like to say thank you for a thoughtful discussion. The representative from West Lynn brought up points that we could talk about over lunch for hours and hours and talk about the Great Depression and how we made it through there and talk about economic theory. Representative Clem got up and spoke exactly what I wanted to say about that period of time in our history. I just want to bring it back down to a very, very basic facts on this bill before us today. What we're about to do, colleagues, is we are going to protect and care for state assets that have been neglected for years. What we're about to do, colleagues, is support our community colleges and our university system, which is the fuel for the state of Oregon. And what we're about to do, colleagues, is send an important message to our fellow citizens that their state government is not going to stand by on the sidelines in a moment of crisis. We're going to use every tool available to us to try to make sure that Oregon gets back up on its feet and moves forward again. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill, please.
To the bill.
Thank you. Colleagues, I've heard a few comments today, and I just want to reemphasize a few of those. One is, no, this body is not going to stand by. We want to act. That's not what this debate is about today. Does this put it to our debt limit? Who sets a debt limit? Who determines it? What is it? But I know one thing, and all of us in this room know one thing, that the borrower is always servant to the lender. Doesn't matter whether you give me something at zero interest, I got to pay it back. And that's what we're talking about here today. Colleagues, I had hoped to stand up today and support a package. I wanted to stand up today and tell you that this was a package that was bipartisan. Did you hear that? That this was bipartisan. Because we all agree we need to do something. Unfortunately, I stand here today in opposition to this package. It's a shame, because there are many projects in this package that are worthy of bipartisan support. We've heard about them. There are several projects that would provide lasting value, lasting jobs, create jobs for Oregonians in this project. We've heard about some of those. If the package's proponents had truly wanted bipartisan support, they would have recognized the concerns of many members who believe that this package wastes tens of millions of dollars and sat down and done something about it. Our caucus outlined five basic and reasonable criteria for projects that could be included in a bonding package that we would have supported. Projects that focus on enhancing community colleges like Mount Hood Community College, because those do help long-term jobs and creation in this state. Projects that focused on improving public safety. Projects that would make structural changes, not just cosmetic changes. Projects that would make substantial and long-term benefit a priority to this state. And most importantly, a criteria that projects would actually outlast the life of the bond. Let's take a look at this last criteria alone. Half the dollars earmarked in this package would not even be listed as basic criteria with this basic criteria. Half of them don't last the life of these bonds. We'd be paying for projects after their useful life has come and long gone. Based on this common sense approach, our caucus leadership made a good faith effort to reach across the aisle and make this package better. I know that for a fact. We've heard about dates of public hearings and work sessions, but no changes were made to this package. There was an opportunity. We can rush things. We can get things done. We can make changes in this building. I've seen it at the end of session till 5 a.m. in the morning sitting on this House floor. However, we were told that there would be no negotiations to this package. The process that brought this bill to the House floor today obviously ignored the opening day speech of our very own speaker when he called for putting partisanship aside and working together collaboratively for the citizens of this state. And not to belabor quotes from our president, but of whom I can agree wholeheartedly on his comments in crafting an economic stimulus plan when he said, "That also means an economic recovery plan that is free from earmarks and pet projects. Many of these projects are worthy and benefit local communities, but this emergency legislation must not be the vehicle for these aspirations." We would do well to heed his advice. Colleagues, today I urge your no vote. And do not obligate today's five-year-old children, to pay for reckless spending.
Representative Freeman yields.
To pay for reckless spending today when that child begins their working career. Think about it. Colleagues, I urge your no vote. Truly for the citizens of Oregon.
Further discussion, Representative Shoffler.
To the bill, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
Everybody else has talked. I figured I'd talk too. Yeah, even though I don't feel that great. You know, my wife went to Mount Hood Community College. I went to Iowa Central Community College, and we know the benefits of those institutions very well in our family. You know, I know this isn't perfect, and I think there's some things we could have put in there to make it a lot better. I'm not going to beat around the bush there, but it's what we have before us, and it's a chance to do something to get thousands of people back to work. I personally have financed lots of maintenance projects on my house and paid it off, chipped away at it, and made my wife happy and improved my property and the value of it. So it does make sense to do these things, and they have been put off. But you know what, folks? There is hope. We have bipartisan support for a lot of things on this floor. that investments that will pay off for decades. And you all know what they are. The Western Oregon Plan Revision, a swing of 5,000 jobs, real jobs, family wage jobs, pay off indefinitely. The liquid natural gas terminals and pipelines, double, I believe it's Clatsop County's general fund and tax base. The minute you turn on the switch, hundreds of building trades jobs, hundreds of them. Oh, let me see, a few other things. These wind generating farms, we need to put our shoulder to the wheel and support them publicly and loudly and not let a few naysayers who are building a mansion up on the river who might be able to see it out of their window. No, it's green, emission-free energy and all the transmission lines that go with it. Hundreds of jobs, union jobs, and will benefit this community indefinitely. We need some flexible land use for industry in this state, period. People, that outfit up there threw in the towel and left the state because we aren't standing up and doing our jobs, in my humble opinion. Now, maybe I impugned everybody on the floor. Probably won't be the last time. But anyway, this is something. It's better than nothing. It could have been better, in my opinion, but it is what we have today, and I urge you to vote.
Further discussion, Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I have a question of the representative from Milwaukee and Southeast Portland.
Representative Nolan has a question of Representative Tomei. Do you yield?
I do.
She does.
I'm sorry, Representative, for not alerting you. But as I listen to the hour or more of debate today, this is reminding me of a debate we had on this floor about 6 years ago, and I think you were here with me then. Do you remember a bill similar to this that issued bonds in a fairly substantial amount about this time of the session?
You're asking me to search my brain, Representative, and yes, I do. It seems to me that it was tobacco settlement funds, and those funds, I think, were meant to be used for health care and for tobacco education. Thank you. Somebody told me education to keep kids from starting to smoke. And it seems to me that was about, it was a large sum of money, maybe $10 million.
Representative Nolan.
Thank you. If I might ask a question of the representative from Central Lane and Linn Counties, please.
Representative Nolan, I'd like to request a question of Representative Barnhart. Do you yield?
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
He does.
Good representative, my apologies for springing something on you, but I believe you were also here in 2003. And now in your current role, maybe you can help us remember the vote on this floor in 2003 that was about bonding. It was, I think, tobacco master settlement funds.
Well, we had several votes in 2003, which was, as you recall, another year in which we faced very significant deficits. If it's the one that I'm remembering that you refer to, it was an attempt to close a huge budget gap at the end of the budget year. We ended up borrowing about $450 million. Debt service the first year, I believe, was about $30 million, and we still have something over $300 million of that yet to pay. It was one of the major items in the report of the Debt Advisory Commission that was just released in the last few days.
Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have one last question of the representative from Southern Oregon.
A question of Representative Richardson.
Yes.
Do you yield? He
yes.
does.
Again, I apologize, but I believe my recollection is correct, Representative, that you voted in favor of this bill that Representative Tomei and Representative Barnhart have described. Can you help us remember what the proceeds of that bond sale were for?
Absolutely. I'm so glad you asked the question because we have so many freshmen here. I was a freshman in the 03 session, and we were told by the Republicans who were in charge at that time that we've got a hole that we can't fill, that we can't get through that the final quarter of that biennium without borrowing $450 million. But don't worry about it, because it'll be against the tobacco settlement money, and so it's just all covered. It's not a problem. So I, like most, voted for that, only to find out later, when I started asking more and more questions and found out where the restrooms were and where LFO was and those kinds of things, I found out that that $450 million, it actually turned out to be about $431 that actually got bonded. But that $431 million was against the general funds, not against any specific flow. In other words, if the tobacco settlement money didn't come, that debt still had to be paid. And you'd want to know that in the current biennium, the cost of that debt service is $112 million. Fungible money that can't be used in our 07-09. And next session, in the 09-11, the next biennial budget, $139 million will go toward that debt that we incurred in 2003. And that debt goes on for 10 years. And so it would be a huge mistake to continue to dig ourselves further and further in a hole when we already have seen the mistakes that were made in an earlier session. Any other questions?
Representative Nolan.
To the bill, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
Thank you for making my point, good representative from Southern Oregon. We are indeed still paying for a bond that was brought to this floor in a prior administration. There is $332 million still owing. And what did we buy with that? We bought paper clips. We paid office rent. And yes, we paid the salaries of state troopers and human services caseworkers and food inspectors and other people who provide services that the Republican leadership at that time was not prepared to cut. By contrast, today we have a bill that invests in infrastructure, that keeps or creates 3,000 jobs in corners all over this state, and has accountability built into it that I think my good friend Tom Butler would be proud of. I think this bill has earned your support, and I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Greg Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, the discussion today has been lively, a little bit on the verge of perhaps over the top. I just want to bring a little bit of perspective. We're dealing with $176 million in the question of whether or not to borrow or not. While the state is facing a $2.8 billion potential shortfall, if we find this vote difficult today, we may want to step back and realize we have many, many more difficult votes before us. I would encourage this body, whether you support Senate Bill 5562A or not, to recognize that we collectively, as a House chamber, are going to have to work together for the betterment of Oregon. Doesn't mean we have to agree. Doesn't mean we have to cast an aye or a nay vote. But at some point, and perhaps just after five terms, you just get to this point. You get a little ornery, and you just want to remind folks, we're all in this together. The folks in Joseph are just as unemployed as the folks in Portland. And the folks in Astoria are just as unemployed as the folks in Medford. And so today we can be partisan, or we can stand up with our votes, but also with the tone of our rhetoric and do what's right for Oregonians. And only you know what that is. And I apologize, this should be in remonstrance. But folks, we can do better than this. Let's make sure that our dialogue is focused on Oregonians and what's best for them, not on the personalities in this chamber. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, again, today I don't doubt the intentions of every one of you, and we've heard those good intentions, and I appreciate each of you and your efforts to better Oregon. I don't doubt the intentions of each member of this body today who vote for this package, because, again, I believe we're all endeavoring to help Oregon. I think it's important to recognize the speed at which leadership brought this to us and the speed at which it will then go rushing towards the governor's desk. I believe this is in an effort to show Oregonians that we're doing something, anything, to address an ever-worsening financial situation for this state. But this is really only a very, very expensive way for us to look busy. While Oregon goes further and further fiscally upside down, we heard it said today that the price of inaction is great, but the price of this action is for Oregonians to have the opportunity to pay double for what might be, as we've heard described, as busy work. Personally, I believe that long ago we should have been addressing Oregon's fiscal situation. When Oregonians started to lose their jobs a year and a half ago, when we in this body knew over a year ago that our revenue stream was on a steep decline, when we brought that up then, we were told Oregon's economy is, quote, right on track, or, quote, holding steady, when in fact that revenue stream was in steep decline. Yet we're here today debating what may appear to be and likely is the wrong solution. This package literally may do nothing to change the recession we are facing, but in fact, what it will do for certain is encumber general fund budgets well into the future. This package is being sold as economic stimulus, but what we're not hearing people say today is how it hurts those very Oregonians who need our support today. When you borrow today, you take from state police, you take from schools, and you take away the ability of us as a state to care for Oregonians who need our help the very most. Colleagues, we've heard over the last few days that this state is at least $800 million upside down. We know as a fact that we cannot meet our current obligations. And if we can't meet our current obligations of today, why is borrowing and taxing Oregonians further the right solution? This package will literally, not maybe, this package will literally cost Oregonians $19 million per year in debt service, nearly $40 million per biennium, taking away from the very services that we are obligated to take care of Oregonians with. We're preparing to pile up that debt, all the while saying this is job creation. It does create some short-term jobs, and as measured by the Employment Department, may reduce Oregon's unemployment rate by a lot of zeros, 0.09%. Let's pay double for a 0.09% difference. Let's be careful. This doesn't sound like responsible and effective job creation. How might we spend that $19 million annually? Will it feel good to go home and tell taxpayers, I voted to pay double to work on projects that have been described as make work? I voted double to pay for light bulbs that will long since burn out by the time we've paid for the bond. I voted double to put paint on a building that will peel off before we pay for the bill. We're going to pay double for batteries that'll be worn out and hopefully recycled before we finish. Which of us in this body today,
Representative Bence Yields,
Thank you, Representative. Which of us in this body today would look a family member or friend in the face if they were facing the severe financial difficulty that we are and say, it's okay, figure out some projects you can do in your home and business, find a way to pay double for it and borrow the money, and you're going to be good to go. You're going to help Oregon's economy. Which of us today would do that? I could go on and on of those kind of comparisons, but I know you've seen the list. Colleagues, I don't see this entire package as economic stimulus. The part I do see that Oregonians care most about is government waste. This is simply a betrayal of Oregonians who sent us here to work together to forge responsible and effective solutions. While we talk of spending yet more and more and more, tax revenue continues to decline and people continue to lose their jobs. Rather than empowering Oregonians to determine where and how to create those jobs, we've heard how important today it is that politicians and government may already be better at that. Today's losers might literally be our kids. How will it feel when you go home and say, today in this body, we voted to build a parking lot for fishermen, and somewhere else in the building, we're having a conversation about cutting school days? Not real good. Today's biggest losers are Oregon's taxpayers. What they see from this is state government taking more of their hard-earned money and wasting a portion of it. The winners in the building today are those who will go home and say, hooray, we did something, anything. Good or bad, we jumped all over it. Some will call this bill a victory, but again, it may literally do nothing but increase our debt. We've heard a lot about the need for job creation. Please go look the 170,000 Oregonians in the face today that have no job. Please go look the 9,700 new unemployed in Oregon from this past December and help them understand why we'd spend double for make work. Our caucus, believe me, is well aware of those high unemployment rates. And with a few exceptions, your members are also aware. Unemployment rates exceeding 10% in many counties. Unemployment rates in O and C counties, which would be the five highest unemployment counties in the state of Oregon today. Unemployment rates in those counties exceeding 12.5%, and as have been predicted to get to 15%. Our constituents understand job creation, and they do understand that this package, though well-intended, is simply a way for us to say we're doing something, and we believe you, the worker, want to pay double for it. I'd urge a no vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Glizio, do you wish to close?
Unfortunately, yes. I hope we didn't miss the bond sale already. I appreciate the, I'm joking. I do appreciate the debate. This is an important debate for us to have, and I really do appreciate it. I think we've had a lively, deliberative discussion, and we will continue this session. So I really do appreciate it. Reasonable people can disagree, and conflict is not always bad. So I do appreciate it. A couple of things I'd like to point out. Number one is this you would think this came out of the subcommittee on a party line vote. It did not. You would think that this came out of the full Ways and Means on a party line vote. It did not. So there are some Republicans who voted in the Senate, and we might even have some Republicans who are going to vote. But you know what? I don't really care. And I don't think the people outside of this building really care. I've heard a lot of discussion about us, how we weren't included, and we don't like this, and we're going to, and that's fine. But you know what? This isn't about us. This is about the people in Grant County who, according to Art Ayers, the state economist, have a 15.9% unemployment rate. However, that does not include discouraged workers, which is a euphemism for people who've just given up. So the true unemployment rate in Grant County is probably 25%. This package will not end the global recession. It will not end Oregon's recession. However, what this package will do is provide immediate stimulus. It will invest in both the long and short term. You can vote against the $50 million of investment in community colleges. You can vote against the jobs in all 36 counties. And you can vote against investing in our institutions of higher education because you're concerned about our debt capacity. Again, I would just refer you back to my earlier comments, and I would refer you to the letter on your desk from Ben Westland, the state treasurer, regarding our debt capacity. We're going to be talking about a transportation package. We have a great deal more debt capacity. This is only 10 or 12% of our total debt capacity. So it's a decision you have to make, and it's not an easy decision. But we're going to have several defining moments. I believe that job creation, job stimulus, job retention for small businesses. Last I heard, plumbers, carpenters, people who are going to get these jobs, a lot of them are small business. The false dichotomy between the public and the private sector needs to end. The public and private sectors work together. We invest and we make decisions, and we are all in this together, and I really appreciate the sentiment expressed by the representative from Loaves and Fishes, right? The land of food and shelter, sorry. I apologize. I'm sick like a lot of you people are. Let me end with this. I'd like to quote three people. Representative Edwards took my first quote, which is from Ronald Reagan, in the spirit of bipartisanship, the best social program is a job. And that's what this package is about, a job. Shovel-ready projects, long and short term. It's about jobs and the dignity that comes with jobs. Testimony before our committee from a representative on this floor who is not of the majority party. When the Department of Transportation comes into my town to work on a road project, they come in and there's only one motel in town. And we have a captured audience. They may take 5 or 6 or 7 hotel rooms in that small town of ours, and maybe they'll go to one of the 3 cafes and spend money there. Perhaps they go to the grocery store. It is a multiplier effect in these rural districts, especially, that are hurting so badly. And all of us know that. I understand. Everyone here feels strongly about this, and everyone here wants to do the right thing. Some of us believe that this is a good first start, first step. We're going to be doing a lot more. You want to cut budgets? We're going to be doing it all session long. So there's a lot of time to be, you know, fiscally conservative. Finally, let me end from an email. I'm glad somebody mentioned we're not talking about our constituents. Well, let me tell you about a constituent of mine. I got an email from Curtis Guthrie. He said, during the Depression of the 30s, when there was no welfare except extended families, I watched my father struggle to put food on the table. Although poor, he would not take handouts, but insisted on working for whatever he received. Working for what he received reinforced his self-image. Handouts were too depressing for him to accept. Whatever you and your fellow legislators do, create jobs for people and let them work for what they get. Not some tax rebate or something they do not have to work for. There is pride in working for what you get. I urge an aye vote.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Senate Bill 5562A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 338, relating to state financial administration, appropriate money, and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 338A. Representative Galizio.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I will read, you know, just very briefly, because I'm assuming that a lot of people have seen this bill. Senate Bill 338 establishes the expenditure limitation for the economic stimulus package that we just had the lengthy debate on. There are 11 state agencies, as well as 17 community colleges, projects totaling about $176.3 million of all funds, $9.7 in additional funds, and there are projects in all 36 counties. It's for deferred maintenance. And May 1st, 2009, DAS and agency heads will come back to the Ways and Means Committee and report on the jobs created. And it is expected that the results will be presented at budget hearings, and the Joint Ways and Means Committee recommends approval of Senate Bill 338.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Galizio, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Buckley, how do you vote? Aye. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Aye. Senate Bill 338A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 5543, related to state financial administration and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 5543A. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Senate Bill 5543 increases Judicial Department's 2007-2009 other funds expenditure limitation by $4 million for the Oregon E-Court program. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier, please.
Question of the carrier, does the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. Just, I know this is not a new issue, but just to refresh my memory, because it's been a while since we dealt with it, is the payback on the bonds going to come from general fund, or will it be a judicial department payback?
General fund.
Okay, thank you.
Nothing further, Representative Huffman? Okay. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Riley, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system.
Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Representative Thatcher votes aye. Representative Kotek, how do you vote? Representative Kotek votes aye. Having received the constitutional majority, the vote, the bill passes. Other businesses of the House? Other businesses of the Senate? Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Effective immediately, the Speaker is making the following appointment to the Oregon Hunger Relief Task Force, Representative Jefferson Smith. Pursuant to ORS 458-532, the House Republican Office is making the following appointment to the Oregon Hunger Relief Task Force, Representative Cliff Benz. If you have any questions, please contact Myra Hall in the Speaker's office at 503-986-1803. Further announcements, Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee on Natural Resources will meet at 1:30.
Thank you. Further announcements, Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Judiciary Committee will meet promptly at 1:30. Thank you.
Further announcements? Seeing none. Remonstrances? Oh. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I didn't enjoy the last hour or so, so I want to hark back to something that I did find quite profoundly important about this session. It happened at 8 a.m. this morning. Colleagues may know that my mentor is Senator Mark Hatfield. His picture is right outside the chamber. I don't know if any of you have heard of him. But let's be clear. I knew Mark Hatfield. I know Mark Hatfield. I worked for Mark Hatfield. And I am no Mark Hatfield. But today, somebody under this dome reminded me of him, and I wanted to share that. The chair of the Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee, where the Whopper is being served up, reminded me of that guy today. And with the courage of very deep convictions that are rooted, I think, in the soil and the forests of Oregon, with accommodation for R's and D's, as we call them, with respect for all points of view, and most impressively to me, with a use of power, the way power should be used in this building. His goal is not to steamroll based on vote counts. His goal, as far as I've seen it, is stewardship of this state through wise utilization of our resources. And that's why I'm glad he's at the helm of that committee. My hat is off to him because his resolve to get this very, very important bipartisan Whopper plan through is rooted in the very best of values of our state. So my hat's off to him. I urge you to support him on this Whopper plan. But most of all, I just want to honor him in my remonstrance. Again, he's that representative from Central and East Salem. And it reminds me a lot of my mentor. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further remonstrances, Representative Cowan.
Apologies, Mr. Speaker. Could I move back to announcements?
Yes, we'll move back to announcements.
Thank you. I apologize. The House Veterans and Emergency Services Committee will begin at 1:30.
Thank you. Further remonstrances? Seeing none. Adjournment. Representative Jensen, 10:15 a.m., Tuesday, February 10th, 2009.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn at 10:15 a.m., Thursday, February 10th, 2009.
Representative Jensen moves the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m., Tuesday, February 10th, 2009. Without objection, the House is adjourned.